Hello, and welcome to episode 48 of Jughead's Basement, featuring the subcategory, The Horror of the Polycephaly Aporia, Part 2, where we meet Kyle Kinane. I'd like to say that I've restarted the Patreon for Jughead's Basement. We hope to get a lot of episodes in this year, both with interviews and with the story we're telling through the horror genre. Please visit our new website, JugheadsBasementPodcast.com. And now let us begin with a short recap of the first part by Jason Strange.
Last time on The Horror of the Polycephaly Aporia. Two heads, one belonging to a man named John, the other belonging to a modern-day philosopher king named Jason, found themselves inexplicably attached to a single body. After a back and forth about facing one fears, they came face to face with a woman named Claire in the floorboards, or an image of a woman. I say she lacked depth, and I don't mean the vapidness of our conversation. From there, a talk on the telephone with a man named Miguel taught us a little about yoga, a little about death, a little about punk rock, and not much about how these two heads came to share a single torso. Oscar Wilde once said that the body sins only once, but I think we're about to learn his count was far off the mark in this, The Horror of the Polycephaly Aporia.
The canned laughter grows in volume as the Polycephaly Aporia, also known as Jason and John, lumbers down the hall. They soon reach a door from which the sound emanates. With their huge calloused hands, they press firmly upon its rusted metallic surface. Door hinges creak in a belaboured moan. The contents of the room are revealed.
The dumbest joke I've ever written.
Is that a
comedy nightclub?
Well, I was going to say a tacky retro hookah lounge.
The walls of the room are covered in red velvet. Grecian columns decorate the corners of what appears to be a main stage. There is a smell of patchouli and clove cigarettes in the air. 25 circular tables are spread across a sunken main floor. On each table is a large glass cylinder, full of a murky liquid and some strange floating objects. A spotlight shines down towards center stage.
What's that noise? It sounds like we've stumbled into the worst piano bar in hell.
Where's the audience?
At first glance, the room with gaudy tables and chairs appears empty. Each glass cylinder is attached to a series of wires. Some wires going into strange glowing machinery and others attached to tiny speaker cabinets.
Wherever the audience is, and whatever it is they're watching, they must love it.
So much laughing and applauding, but the entertainment is horrible. I guess no one here has an ear for good music.
I don't think they have an ear for anything. Look over there.
In each jar, suspended, floating in a formaldehyde sea, is
brains?
A room full of brains. In the center of the disembodied, so-called humans, in a stark white spotlight, is another brain, alone, on stage, floating and sparkling in a well-lit jar. The brain is situated on top of a large stool, next to a microphone stand. A smaller stool is placed nearby with three unopened plastic bottles of water on top. As the spotlight begins to pulse, oscillating between soft and bright like it is breathing, a rough, textured voice issues forth from two large speakers.
Hey, I'm reading this new book. Oh, boy, real page-turner. It's about anti-gravity. You can believe that. I just can't put it down. It's anti-gravity.
Oh, my God, where is that laughter coming from?
Huh. It sounds like the PA system.
Science is really fascinating, though. I mean, once you get past all the nonsense, after all, you can't really trust Some parts. Like atoms, protons, nuclei. Totally fake news, I tell you. You can't trust them at all, if you know why. Because they make up everything.
Yeah, atoms. They make up everything.
Jason, what are we going to do?
First thing we do, hire a better writer for that brain.
While Jason takes in the entertainment, John scans the room. His eyes fall upon a freestanding sign on the left of the stage.
Playing every night until eternity? The hilarious Kyle. Kyle. What? Wait! That's Kyle. That's Kyle.
Who?
Kyle. Kyle. On the stage. That's the Kyle. The Kyle the woman on the floor was talking about.
Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Kyle. Isn't he the funniest brain in a vat you have ever, never seen with your own eyes? Because you don't have any. You see what I did there? Well, we're going to take a short break to let you stretch your synapses and get a fresh drink from a bar that does not exist. Well, doesn't exist outside of your own mind. Then next up, we'll welcome back to the stage for another of his endlessly tedious killer sets, Kyle! Yes, again, Kyle! Always Kyle!
As the loudspeakers exude canned intermission crowd effects, Jason and John wander through the audience members who are conversing to no one but themselves. The two-headed polycephaly aporia steps up onto stage to confront the no-headed stand-up brain of Kyle.
Hey, Kyle!
That's my name. Don't wear it out. Right? Love that one.
I think my dad used to say that.
Oh, smart guy. Hey, I'd ask you to pull my finger, but I don't think my brain farts.
Ah, puns. Hi. But this raises a good question. How can you be doing stand-up comedy? You don't have a body.
Huh? What are you talking about?
Well, you're just a brain in a vat.
What about it, buddy? You saying that brains can't do stand-up comedy?
Yes, because as a brain in a jar, you literally have nothing to stand up.
Whoa, good joke there, guy. I might have to borrow that one.
Right. Well, then, how did this happen to you?
What are you talking about, guys?
You're a brain in a jar. How did you wind up in this state?
What, Nevada? I took a ride at Albuquerque and kept going.
Wait a minute. We're in Nevada?
I fucking hope not. This neon shithole's fly trap for losers.
Kyle, what the hell was that?
What was what?
Kyle, did you just get zapped?
Zapped? Nah. It must have been an optical illusion. You know, like a mirage or an honest politician. Right? Our government system has been corrupted so much by just unaccountable money that expecting honesty in our elected officials is just some kind of goddamn joke.
Holy shit, are you okay?
Sorry. I can't think too many shocking thoughts without getting a bit of a jolt. I mean, what does Joe Cole and a tropical bird have in common, huh?
Because it takes more than two cans to wake you up. I get it, two cans.
Ah, this guy's a student of the craft. Good for you.
Too many shocking thoughts, huh, Kyle?
John turns his head slightly towards Jason and gives a knowing wink. Jason is somehow keyed in to John's loose plan.
So, tell me about the audience out there. They seem to absolutely love your brand of inoffensive humor.
Yeah, all those brains out there, they're loving it. You're killing, but for us with the body, you're... jokes lack a certain bite?
Fuck! That reminds me of a joke. Actually, hey, a mad scientist was in the audience and he said, I haven't had a bite all day. And so I bit him. Which is ironic because I have no mouth. I am screaming inside!
What was that you just said? Are you being forced to say things you don't want to say?
I scream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream. Let's do it again.
Please,
screaming,
no
screaming
more
for
bad
ice creaming, screaming, screaming,
we just
scream,
want to know
ice cream.
Who did
You're
this to
screaming.
Us?
We're all screaming.
Who did this to us?
Did what? What are you talking? I can't see you. I'm surprised. I'm even able to talking about not seeing. Why does Helen Keller hate
Porcupines.
Why does Helen Keller hate porcupines? Ugh.
They're painful to look at.
Shut up. We are two heads on one body. We need your help.
I think you guys should be grateful. Two heads are better than one. That's what they say. Hey, guys, you guys like jokes? Did you know it's illegal for the president to use an extension cord? As it'd be an overreach of his power. Hey, I heard a fight broke out in the orchestra pit. Apparently someone struck a wrong chord, and it led to a lot of violins. You never hear any mention of who cut the cord at Jesus' birth. Must have been unbiblical. Cutting the cord!
I'm seeing a running thread. What's up with these cord jokes?
What's up with the cord jokes? I don't know. Should I cut all of them? Should I cut,
yes,
all, of
please,
the cord
cut
jokes?
All the cord jokes?
Yes, please, cut all the cord
jokes. Tendrils of electricity begin to writhe around Kyle's jar. John quickly looks to Jason. The jar begins to vibrate and the glass cylinder wobbles.
Jason,
what?
John quickly attempts to override their body by taking over the limbs without consulting Jason. But Jason is instantly aware of John's plan, and instead of thwarting the effort, he lends a helping hand. They grab Kyle's jar and yank the cords out from the top. The liquid in Kyle's container begins to bubble up. The liquid squeals like an overheated teapot. The top explodes open, steam pours out. A hail of sparks trail after the flying electronic equipment.
Kyle! Man, God, are you alright?
God damn it. Why? How do I have a headache? I don't even have a goddamn head.
Another good question.
Quick, give me some water bottles.
Okay. Give me a second. I see a couple over there.
Okay, great. Listen to me very carefully. Unscrew the tops, okay? Pour them out onto the floor, yes. Then fill them up with vodka and bring them back over here.
Vodka?
Yeah. If I'm doing comedy here for the rest of eternity, you could bet your ass I'm doing it on a half a quart of Grey Goose.
Oh, my God, Kyle. Grey Goose. What happened to you?
One day, I was a normal guy, you know, like with a body, a body with hands, and a couple of feet and legs, and a penis, a glorious penis, and an ass. Oh, you know, you don't really appreciate your ass when you don't have it anymore. Like mine wasn't the greatest in the world, you know, but I would do anything just to feel it against someone's couch, like sitting. I never appreciated sitting when I had an ass. Now here I am, assless. Wishing I could just smash that ham on someone.
Oh my God, there's a canned laughter again. It was an okay funny joke, but not that funny, for God's sake. Where's it coming from? What the fuck is up with this place?
It's the club. It's a piece of hell, I'm telling you. As I said, one day, I was doing gigs, working on my comedy. You know, telling it how it is. Truth bombs, blowing people's minds. Next thing you know, I'm a brain in a jar. And I'm playing to a room with other brains in other jars. And at first, it's weird as fuck because, you know, brains in jars. But you put me on a stage and give me a mic in my hand or, you know, like, next to the jar. Either way, you give me the environment to perform, I'm going to do it. I'm a natural, and this is what I do. It's instinctual. Except anytime I did any of my old material, zap. Talk about politics, zap. Talk about my sex life, zap. Talk about anything having to do with anything fucked up. Zap, zap, motherfucking zap. So I tried to just stop telling jokes entirely. And then I got zapped again. So what do? Out of desperation, I say this lame knock-knock joke.
Oh, who's there?
Ow.
Ow who?
Werewolves of London. See? I tell that joke, no zap. So I tell another, no zap again. Thunderous applause over and over and over again. I mean, if it weren't for the voiceover job on Paradise PD, I'd have gone nuts.
Well, wait, step back. Did you say a voiceover job? Where? How?
Oh, voiceover's great. Yeah, no, I play this drug-addicted narcotics dog on a show called Paradise PD. It's on Netflix, if you got that. I escape from here once a week to record the show, but then somehow by the end of the day, I'm back here.
Oh, well, I guess that makes sense that a brain can do voiceover.
Yeah, I think since I sound like someone would clean your toilet for some free cigarettes, I kind of get cast as various scumbags and miscreants, you know. Hey, my voice isn't pretty to listen to, but it gets me paid. It's like when an old lady is a stripper. You know, the novelty pays the bills.
I thought there was no windows and the doors were locked from the outside. That's what Miguel Chen told us. How do you get out of here?
Oh, well, I like hiking, you know. Every person should see the Grand Canyon at least once in their life. And know what it's like to feel truly small. Not in a negative way, but Understanding how we're all tiny gears in a much larger machine kind of thing. Perspective. Getting away from man-made creation. It's always healthy. And it's nice to be reminded that nature doesn't care if you survive or not. You know, you learn about taking care of yourself much quicker.
But you're only a brain.
Oh, I hike in my mind. Yeah, yeah. To the rim of the Grand Canyon. Just staring over the edge of the Niagara Falls. Walking through the dunes of the Mojave Desert. Going down the laundry chute off the kitchen into the basement. There's that door that locks from the inside. And then just wandering through the streets of Boston. Just
what did he say?
Just hiking. Just getting the mud on my boots.
Jason.
Just taking in the fall
we
air.
Should get out of here.
Oh, maybe I'll stop for a Sam Adams. I don't even like that beer, but you know when you're there, it's kind of like...
Jason and John casually back out of the strange brain-filled comedy club.
You know,
their exit is unseen by all the brains. Even Kyle continues to speak to no one about his imaginary hikes.
It's like getting mouse ears at Disneyland. It's just one of the things you do. You haven't visited Boston unless you've gotten punched by a bagpipe player from a band that's not racist, but very proud of their heritage. So
Kyle has a newfound freedom to speak as he pleases. And yet this freedom is not free enough for him to permanently escape his plight. The only difference now is he will have to fend for himself by actually creating meaningful, impactful, edgy jokes for the rest of eternity, or else return to the knock-knock and dad jokes that have kept him trapped, but somewhat at ease, bathing not only in formaldehyde, but in an ignorance of his own mediocrity.
Thank you for listening to episode 48 of Jughead's Basement, subcategory The Horror of the Polycephaly Aporia, part 2, starring Kyle Kinane and reoccurring actors, narrator Steve Ball, announcer Brian Rooney, and of course, me, John Jughead, and Jason Strange. Part 3 will be starring Grim Deeds, featuring a song written specifically for the episode, and we will be welcoming back Claire Hall. So thanks for listening, and here now is the full interview with Kyle Kinane.
I only have two questions, but what do you got? You got a couple, Jason, too?
Yeah.
So I'll go first here. Mine are more like vague sort of questions, but I just want to see where you take them. So Kyle, after, you know, hellacious year of the pandemic, it's probably a lot of performers, it's hurt a lot of, you know, getting out there in the world and doing what we like the best and, you know, refining your work. But this question is more about the existential things that happen to us while we're in this sort of situation. And I wanted to ask you if you were like, are you ready for death? Like, have you thought much about death?
I'm always hesitant to put comedians are just the modern philosophers. It's like, no, the only reason that is because they have free time to think about shit because they're not bogged down. So they could just waste time pissing around different corners of thought. So to think about death. Yeah. Cause I've tried to see what jokes I can make about it. So I think as soon as you look at something, try and figure out how you can make jokes about it, you kind of by default start to try to understand it better.
I mean, we're getting older too, so we're sort of looking death a little bit closer. Do you think your sort of attitudes towards it have changed over the years?
I started early on when I started really traveling for comedy and was like, would be on flights a lot. And I would sit, you know, I would kind of during landing or takeoff or landing or any turbulence or any kind of moments in the plane, like, be like, at this point, have you done everything you wanted to do, or are you at least trying to do everything you want to do? And if the answer was yes, then I'd be like, all right, we can go down. We can put this thing in Lake Michigan. I answered yes again. But I think that it's not ready for death, because that sounds kind of morbid, but it's more of like, are you doing all the stuff you want to be doing in your life? You know, are you pursuing the things you're interested in or want? If you're doing that, then if you died while you're in pursuit, hey, at least you're trying. If you died after the accomplishment of it, then hey, you did the thing you want to do in the first place. So that's kind of how I've looked at it anyway. So all this stuff going on hasn't really, it's actually made me pause it.
So do you think you've been on a path to sort of satisfy yourself with what you've, are you satisfied enough to face death in that way?
Yeah, I mean, I'd bummed out if I had to check out early, but who's to say what's early? Who's to say that next year's not going to suck? You know, so
I think it is a good motivator to be like, okay, it's that hokey bumper sticker wisdom of, you know, live every day like your last and blah, blah, blah. But doesn't mean jump out of a plane or anything like that. But it's like, all right, I've been moving in the positive direction, or at least of my opinion, positive direction of what I want to do, and trying to write bits that are not only funny, but like, hey, okay, this is introspective, or hopefully there's like some element of understanding in this comedy, and it's not punching down, and it's not just making fun of something for the sake of making fun of it. It's like, hopefully it's like, oh, here's a level of understanding that I'm trying to gain, which is why I'm writing the joke, and that maybe somebody listening to it can laugh at it and be like, oh, I didn't think about looking at it that way. So yeah, I'm not too stressed about the whole death thing. I think the how is going to be more of a bummer than the why or the when.
I feel that way too. I think it's not really dying. It's just that I just don't want to be in pain.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the whole thing. Yeah. You can eat any kind of meal to not be hungry anymore, but there's good ones and bad ones, man.
My second question is, I think a lot of my questions now are really about just getting older and sort of understanding ourselves, like where we were and where we are now. And I know, Kyle, that you've always been a really big punk fan. You know, you used to and still do go to a lot of punk shows, and it's really a part of who you are. Do you think the idea of punk for you has changed over time? Once again, do you feel like you look at it differently than you did when you were first going to shows?
I mean, I think I still hung on to the ethos and the mocking. There was always like, you hated anybody that was famous, or the idea of selling out. And, you know, you get, hopefully you mature out of the concept of all selling out is bad. Some of it's bad, but some of it is like, hey, do you want to get paid more money for doing the thing you're busting your ass at? You'll continue to bust your ass, but you'll be rewarded more so than you were previously. There's nothing wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If your money's not coming from the blood of somebody else, go make your money. Now, not to say that I'm like going headfirst into some sort of capitalism, but I feel like there's some people out there that, because of punk rock, they got paid a lot of money. And then because they know it's all sham, can take that money away from, I wouldn't say fans, because that's not where the money's coming from. Like, but if you're going to take it from a corporation, hey, what am I trying to say? Okay. You know how you see like like an actor do a commercial, and you'll be like, what do they need the money for? And then I read some about some actor did a commercial. They're going to pay him $1 million bucks for a day's worth of work. It's because he could easily take that $1 million and give it to the ASPCA or whatever charity they were giving it to. It's like, oh, you can take money. Now you're in a position to take money away from these corporations and put it in the hands of where it can be used well. So that's still pretty punk rock. And it's like, okay, you want me to work one day and give me a dumb amount of money? Give it to me, and I'm going to move it into better hands. So I think that attitude's changed, where I have to look below the surface of what you think people's motivations are. With like, especially because I did comedy and I did like Hollywood showbiz stuff, and it wasn't sleeping on floors. But that's how I started doing comedy too, was doing punk rock stuff and sleeping on couches. And
I really relate to what you're saying there, Kyle, because me and Ben had a big battle years ago where we got approached by like some major labels, and my sort of take was, well, let's just do that for an album and then use all that money to fund all the things we've ever wanted to do, you know. But the reality is, it's much more complicated than that. You know, contracts get ugly and you get stuck, and like hooskerdoo, your band explodes or something like that. So I've always had sort of a mixed relationship with that idea of using that money to, you know, fund other projects, but I do believe that that's the way to go.
Yeah, it's, you can move money away from the villains over to better causes with certain power, with fame, you know. And also, I mean, the punk rock is like, I mean, it's been about a year and a half or 2 years ago where I'm like, oh, I moved to California, I moved to LA to like get some exposure so then I could do better shows on the road. And I got that. I'm not, you know, the whole acting and this and that. I was like, no, I got the thing I wanted to. I want to tell jokes. And I think a lot of the messages in punk rock and everything, it's like, well, how much do you need? How much stuff? I'm like, yeah, well, I was starting to get caught up in the, well, so-and-so got this and so-and-so makes this much per episode on this show. And I was like, but why do I want that? Like, how much do you need? You know, like I think it keeps the materialism in check about who's really directing your desires and wants in this world. Is it commercials? Is it, you know, now social media? Look at so-and-so's amazing life. No, so-and-so's showing you a picture from their vacation where they were miserable the whole time, but the sunset looked good, you know?
I'm going to end it right here, and then I hand it over to Jason. But that's always a battle I deal with. Like, I've made choices that I'm proud of that have sort of taken me away from being more famous or having more money. And it's still a battle in my head that, like, oh, I could have had this or that. But I think ultimately I think I have my confidence in, you know, I'm proud. I'm proud of those choices I've made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about that today where I was like, I was just to follow up. I was out bike riding in the woods earlier, and I was like, so when I was like, do you get like at night, do you feel good about who you are? You know, do you feel good about who you are and how you treated people, regardless of the quality of the bed that you're sleeping on? Do you get a good night's sleep because you're happy with your choices?
Thanks, Kyle. I'm going to hand it over to Jason now.
Touching back on these themes of death, self-preservation, and what exactly you want out of life, you recently read Dracula for a YouTube series, right?
Yeah.
Like, first off, congratulations, because that's pretty damn hardcore, because reading Dracula cover to cover. But like, while you were reading, whoop.
I skipped the last episode was me doing the cliff notes to get through the end of it.
That still counts. I mean, it would have got you a passing grade in English 103. But while you were reading it, were you ever kind of sympathetic for one side or the other? Did your, like, because Dracula poses this offer to be immortal, to have power for the exchange of your soul, or to render yourself as this, basically this living parasite. Like, was there ever, like, did you find yourself always on, like, shifting allegiances as you were reading it, or were you handily on, like, one side of the man versus vampire battle from start to finish?
That's a great question, because I'd never read Dracula previous to this, and the whole thing was like, oh, this might be a fun, a feat of strength, really, to just sit and read this book. I did not realize how long it was going to take, and I started this even pre-COVID. I think I started in January, and then I looked at it like homework every time I had to tape. So as far as siding with anybody, I kind of was thinking, like, you know, okay, that Dracula, that vampire Dracula, vampires are always like sexy creeps. So you never really have any empathy for them because they're always kind of like the horny undead. So when actually a couple weeks ago, me and the missus, we watched the movie Interview with a Vampire, which I'd never seen. And, you know, all the hunky eye candy aside, that was like, oh, they're taking Brad Pitt's character as like a reluctant vampire and how he hates being a vampire. And so I didn't really see that so much in the book. It was just, you had Dracula, you had his henchmen. And then it was, you know, everybody kind of like, he snatched up the one gal, and I hated the book. I'll be honest. I hated the book. I thought the writing was just bloated. Every time Van Helsing, every time that it was, because it was all diary entries, and all it was always, all they did was talk about pallor and the color of people's cheeks. Every page, the color of her cheeks, the color of his cheeks. That's the only medical diagnosis anybody can give is the color of somebody's cheeks. It's either their cheeks were red, their cheeks were pink, or they were dead. That was the only three modes of existence. And so the book didn't do much for me, but I was thinking, like, oh yeah, vampires are always sexy predators. And then Interview with a Vampire, Brad Pitt is like, I don't want to be a vampire. I hate this. I feel horrible for killing people. And I was like, oh, that's a take that I hadn't seen in other ones. So I don't know if that answers your question so much, because it was about a movie I saw instead of a book.
I mean, we'll take it. Are you
in the book? No, in the book. No, I didn't. I was more just aggravated that I chose that book to read and resented the book and myself for the whole project.
I mean, I would say if you were ever to try it again, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is a much shorter read.
A little more nuance there to the monster.
I don't know. Have you ever done any audiobooks, or has this sort of project kind of killed all aspirations for that?
Well, as we were saying before, you know, getting paid really changes your mind about some things. So I haven't done audiobooks, but I've been doing voiceover work for long enough. And I did actually my buddy Sam Talent, who wrote a fantastic book, a fictional book about a road comic that is getting some good press now. I wrote the foreword for that, and he's submitting it to do an audiobook and put me in for the running. So I may do that. I wouldn't mind it. The series I was doing with Dracula was called Public Domain with Kyle Kinane. I figured I'd read books from the public domain so I couldn't get sued. But man, that's some dry, a lot of dry work in the public domain.
It's that and some only select works of Sherlock Holmes, I think.
There's some. I got a few others off the list, and I'll flip through them first. I'm not gonna just dive in blind like I did for Dracula.
I mean, I appreciated it. It was sufficiently creepy to connect to death and comedy. I was reading lately that like the current political landscape kind of killed aspects of comedy, because certain things. I was watching a video for Trumpy Bear. I don't know if you ever saw this, but it was a legit commercial selling this stuffed bear, and everyone in it was so sincere, but it could have been like a Tim and Eric sketch for all you from just watching it. So I was curious, like, you're within the comedy world. Do you see, as we're about to kind of shift, hopefully, into a different sort of like political climate, are there current aspects of comedy that are just, I hate to say, like, going to die, but like not going to work anymore? Or is that just kind of like an oversimplification?
I mean, you could say the same thing about music. Like, popularities will ebb and flow for certain styles, but none of it's going to go away. I don't really do anything political, because as many people have pointed out, it's like every late night talk show host has a team of professional comedy writers, and they're attacking politics every day. So for me to try and come up with one bit that also for myself won't be evergreen, I can't use it. Like, especially, and I don't even want to talk about Trump administration anymore, but the joke is not going to be funny because something even dumber is going to happen the next day. So to write a great political joke is great if you're a late night talk show host, because then the next night you're going to say 10 more of those jokes. Whereas for me, like, oh, great, it worked tonight, but then next week it's not going to be relevant. Well, I'm trying to come up with stuff that's not timeless in the sense of like every bit is classic, but timeless in the sense that I'm trying to build up an hour so I can go on the road. I can't do an hour of stuff that was only funny a year and a half ago. So I don't think anything's going to die. I think anybody who's still trying to make jokes about Trump, like, the jokes weren't as funny as the truth. All you had to do was point out like the Trumpy Bear thing. Like, it's just weird, man. It's weird. It's like, I think it's cult-like behavior. Yeah, that's a Tim and Eric sketch. The whole thing where they book the Four Seasons landscaping instead of the Four Seasons hotel seems like an episode of Veep or something. Like, it was already funny enough for how inane it was. No, nothing's going to die. I mean, anybody that was doing political comedy, if you make your living off of writing jokes on a daily basis, you will just pivot to whatever is the news anyway, if you're good enough and worth your, excuse me, worth your salt as a writer in that vein, you'll be fine. If all you could do was write Trump jokes, then I'm not sad that you're out of a job. I mean, I'm sad that you're out of a job, but I'm not sad for the reason that you're out of a job.
And that is the end of episode 48. Stay tuned next week for an interview of Kevin Apers of The Apers and also his cool thrashy metal band, Insanity Alert. We will talk about quarantine, about our top five songs in any genre, and whatever comes to our heads. Also, once again, please, through cash or reviews or shares, make sure everyone you know knows about this podcast. Whether they'll like it or not, that's up to them. So goodbye.